I was taken in by Emery Roth and Sons. At that time, it was on 2nd Avenue and 52nd Street.
New York City.
Yeah, New York City. And what they were doing is they were working on the World Trade Center.
72, is that when it was completed?
Well, it was, yeah.
But it began planning in 63.
It actually began, it entered the office, I think, in 1962.
Uh-huh.
Now, Emery Roth and Sons in the trade is what is called a pencil, meaning that they don't do design. They simply accept the designs of big-time designers that come in from other areas, mm-hmm. you know, that have buildings where the other person is the architect of record and that sort of thing.
Right.
And so they have a production staff. But they also had to have, just simply for show, a design group. So I'm going through this routine of say, can you do this? Can you do that? And I said, you know, and then the guy would say, no, you can't work here. So when I got to that place, I went through the same routine, and they said, okay, put them right in the design group. I said, wow, I'm not realizing what it is I'm going into.
Right.
But I'm in there for a while, and I'm not doing a thing. I'm just sitting at a drafting board, and so I go up to Mr. Gershon, my boss, and I said, what's happening? Why aren't I doing any work?
Right.
And he said, well, I want you to go back to your drafting board and think great thoughts. Now, that's almost like somebody talking from a comic book mind. I said, what? What are you talking about? But I went and did that, and eventually Yamasaki showed up. This time,
now Yamasaki was
Minoru Yamasaki.
Mm-hmm.
He showed up now with a model, because up to this point, there were just these scatterings of plans, you know, that were being sent out and examined by engineers in the office and the like and that kind of stuff, but now the actual model showed up, and it was the most beautiful model I ever saw. You know, made where it was all plastic and made with those at that time it was made with tools that was scaled down. You know, like a buzzsaw. It was a little tiny thing, so that all the parts were perfectly aligned,
right.
But it was totally empty.
Huh.
And he was like so upset about the fact that the Sears Tower in Chicago was also on its way up, which was eventually became higher.
Mm-hmm.
He was concerned with. With making sure that they didn't get ahead of him, and so he just left this office to do one basic thing: connect the building into the infrastructure of New York, which meant that we had to design it, meaning we had to put the guts inside the thing.
Right. Right.
And so I'm working along, and I was assigned floors 15 to 45 in Tower 2. And I began to realize immediately that as you had to have three banks of 18 elevators to get people to the top, it meant you ate into the space that they were renting very rapidly. So you were ending
right,
up...
Right, the volume of the elevator shafts,
yeah, so,
et cetera.
So,
right.
So you're ending up with places, a corridor and some boiler rooms. When at that time, office landscaping, where you had an open thing where you could have focus groups and all that kind of stuff, was one of the reasons why he sold it as an idea, and it was going fast. And I said to myself, well, maybe if you build bridges every fifth level, you will then have rentable space on the flat.
Hmm.
And this would help the structure. Because I began to see some things that were going on there that were kind of dangerous, like they were eliminating asbestos flocking. because they wanted to fast track it, meaning they wanted to design and build simultaneously, and he was in a race to get it up.
Right, because of what was happening in Chicago.
Yeah, and
at least partially, yeah.
Oh yeah, but the other problem was at the ground level in the basement, they had to design something that they eventually called a bathtub, where they first sunk into the muck at the end, you know, down by Battery Park.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at a profile of New York, you see the granite block sticks out from the ground up near the Cathedral of St. John, but as you go along the Central Park, it kind of levels out. But then when you get to Canal Street, drops down 75 feet because that whole area was an alluvial deposit,
mm-hmm,
of material from the East River and the Hudson River. And what happened is that they were, when people first came to New York, they came in boats, and they landed there, and they made boat slips, and the inevitable occurred. They started throwing garbage overboard and then filled it up. So like in Boston, almost all of Boston is filled land, because it used to be a series of little islands, like Beacon Hill's an island,
mm-hmm,
Fort Hill's an island, that kind of stuff. And so then they discovered that they were going to build this monstrous set of buildings on what was muck. And so they decided that they'd try bentonite. That's a colloidal clay that you can drill a hole into muck, and it'll hold it back enough before you throw in some concrete and some rebar.
Right, you can set.
And then you can get piles,
mm-hmm,
that'll go down to that. And they made what they call a bathtub.
Wow.
Now, that was part of the... That was the main reason why the thing is up or went up, and so that this killed a lot of the construction time where they were trying to hurry.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So they started doing things like, instead of welding steel together, they bolted it, and it turns out that those were some of the reasons why it came down.
What did you think when that happened? Holy cow!
Well, I knew exactly why it did. I mean, people talk about Building 7 coming down at the same time. I knew why, because when I was there, there were these engineers from Saudi Arabia. There was actually part of the Ben Laban Construction Company.
Go figure.
Because Yamasaki had worked with them and built them up.
Right, that's a huge billion-dollar construction gang, by the way. Yeah.
Right. And they started in Arabia and worked and worked for Yamasaki, who was doing all kinds of things like in airports, schools, hospitals, you know, doing very, very large projects, and so he just brought them over.
Uh-huh.
And so I see these guys, you know, these swarthy looking guys walking around, and some of them were asking me, Where would you put demolition devices?
Huh.
And I said, well, I'm not really an engineer, but I'm curious as to know why you want to know why you put things in it to demolish it, and it isn't even built.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it was so strange to me. And he said, well, that's the way things are going now. So in a certain sense, the reason why they came down is because the Ben Laban Construction Company knew exactly where all the
stress points, etc.,
the places were,
right,
that they put demolition devices, because it New York.
So you believe it was demolished? It was brought down?
Yeah. Well, that in the early 60s and 70s in New York, buildings were going up and down. Like every 6 months, you go away and you come back, there's a new building.
So they built them with charges built into them.
Build it so that it would come down. And so those guys knew the whole story.
Hmm.
And so it was very, very easy for them to, to do that. And so it actually came down from extreme capitalism. you know, as wanting to do that. And so I at the time that I said that we should put in these various walkways, bridges between the buildings, which would be welded into the middle structure and all that kind of stuff. So the everybody in the office said, "Wow, yes, that's a good idea. You know, the things will stay up better."
Right. Yes.
And, and then so then they called up the liaison officer for the Yamasaki's office, and then the next day I got called into the office, and he said, "You're fired," because Yamasaki said, "Oh, what I want is a prism pure visual vibration, you know, in the sky." Mm-hmm. What he produced was an 11.
Mm.
11, of course, in numerology is the worst number. You know, it was the number of destruction.